Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for TWiT specials is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT Live special number 132, recorded June 28th, 2012. Google I.O. Keynote Day 2. Breaking news is brought to you on TWiT by Slingbox, which can turn your iPad into a television. With the iPad app from Slingbox, you can watch your home TV on your iPad anywhere you go. Check it out at slingbox.com/TWiT.
Welcome to TWiT Live special number 132. I'm Tom Merritt. Leo Laporte will be joining me, and we'll be covering day two of the Google I.O. keynote announcement. We expect to hear about Google TV. We expect to hear about Chrome, but probably the browser and Chrome OS. I'd be interested to see where Google's going next with the operating system. It hasn't quite got the traction that it needs, or at least that they expect. Google TV hasn't got the traction that it needs, although new products announced by Sony and Vizio earlier this week probably will play into this. We'll probably see some other product announcements, I would expect. And who knows what else? Maybe more skydivers will rain from the sky. There's a lot of talk on Twitter that they're going to replicate what they did yesterday and do more explaining. We'll just have to see. Of course, all breaking news on TWiT brought to you by Slingbox. Some companies say their system lets you watch TV anywhere you want. Slingbox is the only one that really, really does. So you buy a Slingbox, you plug it into your home TV. It doesn't matter what service you have. Any of the cable companies, any of the satellite companies are just over the air. It doesn't matter. All your devices in your home theater can be controlled by the Slingbox, and then everything you have at home is streamed over the internet to you, and only you. It's not broadcast. You're not breaking any laws here. You're just streaming it back to you. So anywhere in the world you have an internet connection, you can watch your home TV. You can watch it on a tablet. You can watch it on your phone. You buy that app once. You buy the Slingbox once. That's it. There's no monthly fees. There's no subscription charges. Check it out. It's the best way to watch your TV the way you want anywhere in the world, even in the next room. I mean, it's great. I'm going to be going on down to Anaheim for VidCon, and I'm going to be able to watch all my home TV down there. But I also we just bought an exercise machine. Now we don't have to like run cables out there or anything. We just take the iPad out there, and we can watch everything that's on the TV in the living room out in the garage. It's great for all kinds of reasons. Check out more at slingbox.com/TWiT. Available at Best Buy and Amazon. We thank Slingbox for their support of breaking news. Now, don't think that I'm not bringing you what's happening at Google I.O., because this is what's happening at Google I.O. A black screen. Actually, that's probably not what's happening. Probably the people inside of Google I.O. see a big sign that says Google I.O. In fact, that's what the live blogs are saying. But they have not started yet. Tim Stevens of Engadget reports that the lighting is rather dim, and they're announcing the Live Code Lab. They talked about that. I saw that on the blogs yesterday. There's just a bunch of slides up there while we wait for somebody to actually come take the stage. But as I mentioned, Google TV, Google Chrome, Chrome OS, likely on the docket for today. And more skydiving. I don't know if there's going to be more skydiving. Jammer B and I both saw people talking on Twitter. They're going to do the skydiving thing again. Yeah? Is that real? Is that for real? Leo says yes. He is going to skydive.
I'm going to rappel down the side of the brick house. No, Sergey said, hey, that went so well, we're going to do it again today.
Wow.
You could
do
that?
But I don't know if they'll do the skydive. I think they said just watch the skies of San Francisco. I'm not sure exactly if they'll do the same thing or something else. He also said that...
Jetpacks?
He wanted to show more of glass.
Oh, good.
So I'm hopeful that we'll actually see something besides just it takes pictures.
It definitely seemed like Vic Gundotra was taken slightly unawares.
Oh, I think that's true.
Yeah.
Although, in hindsight... A Zeppelin, not a
yes,
blimp.
Yes, it is a Zeppelin.
Because it's a rigid structure, Tom tells me.
That's right.
So in hindsight, I mean, I don't know why it was so urgent. They could float that Zeppelin exactly. Maybe there was timing with the city of San Francisco.
Well, the Zeppelin isn't as maneuverable as a plane.
It's not.
No, it's not.
So maybe they did say you're not going to be able to stay
If they
here.
Had missed the window for jumping, it would have taken a while to circle. I mean, they could
Got
have
it.
Circled back around,
Got
but it would have taken
so maybe
a
that
lot longer.
It. Yeah, it was pretty clear. Oh, here, Vic Gundotra is coming up on stage, so I think we're... Where is our feed?
The feed from YouTube is not playing. We've seen some...
chat room, where are you watching this? Because maybe...
I'm seeing it on the live blogs myself. I don't know if that's what...
There's a YouTube link.
Yeah, click on one of those, Chad. I've got the official developers
thing mistake.
Up, and it's not working either. I know. Neither the YouTube nor this is working.
Yeah, I don't think they'll skydive again. I think they'll do something else. So if you put that link in the chat room again so that Chad can click it...
Tim Stevens says, Vic's hoping everyone enjoys their Android development kits.
The PD kit.
And he's got Google glasses on.
Oh.
He's wearing the blue one that was in the bag yesterday.
That's Sergey's apology. All right, Vic. Here's some glasses for you. Now, the thing that we were talking about on This Week in Google with Kevin Marks and Gino Trapani was we were a little disappointed that really they didn't tell us anything new about glass. We knew that it...
they did in the press conference afterwards.
Later they said
a few
stuff.
Things. But I would say that
not
on
much.
Stage, yeah.
And it's still not clear. Apparently it is Wi-Fi, but not 3G. It probably gets its bandwidth from tethering.
Yeah, he said you'll there have to go. Tether it to a phone.
Not much of a frame rate, but there we get some.
Wow. They're getting swamped.
Boy, you do one skydive, and then everybody wants to be at your keynote.
Apparently, he already made a joke about waiting for Sergey to jump out and interrupt him at any moment.
He said he was Taylor Swifted yesterday.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, we have two going now.
He said something about hang... Oh, no, that's Tim Stevens saying he's hoping hang gliding is involved.
I like protocol in our chat room's idea. Shoot someone out of a cannon with a Chromebook.
Like holding a Chromebook?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe a helmet made of chrome. We're still working on getting our feet. We welcome you. And
Sundar Pichai took the stage. This is exactly
the
way
chrome,
day two went last year.
Chromebook guy.
Yeah.
Chrome OS guy, I should say. And we welcome you to our live coverage of Google I.O. Day 2. We're doing our keynote again because, true to form, Google separates all of their announcements into two long presentations. And so that means we're back with another long presentation.
Of their presentation.
Of their presentation. We'll do Windows Weekly right after. And I think time-wise we're going to be fine. There's no iPad today because Sarah is still in France. And she may never come back.
Was I projecting or did you say that with jealousy? Because I'm extremely jealous of her right now.
Have you seen her pictures?
Yes.
I'm very jealous.
All of her food.
Food. And then she was touring a castle. And I saw... It's a swimming pool. It's beautiful.
Movie stars.
Yeah.
You've got a notification.
That apparently we're doing breaking news. Oh, this is breaking news brought to you by Slingbox.com.
Sundar Pichai on stage. We're trying to get the stream working, but we're having some problems. Sundar says they're primarily going to be talking about Chrome and cloud applications.
Now, we still haven't heard about the Google TV that's been rumored, the new
Google
TV.
Well, he says he's talking about that. That doesn't mean they won't talk about Google TV afterwards, I suppose. But you're right. We haven't heard much about that.
One of the questions we were asking, and I was asking of Gino Trapani, is why no API for Google Plus? And they made some interesting announcements. I don't know if you covered it in TNT yesterday.
No, it came after TNT, but I know I saw that.
It's called History, Google Plus. Uh-huh. History, and it is an API for, use an example, Foursquare has the ability to take every Foursquare check-in from their database and dump it into a timeline-like interface for Google+.
It's still not a right API to Google+.
Well, it's an interesting
but it
way.
Writing
yeah,
to
it's
Google
an interesting
Plus.
Idea. I think what they were concerned about with a right API is a buzz-like. Here we go.
As a browser.
All right, he's talking about the numbers. He's in the early part of the presentation.
This is Sundar Pichai, who's in charge of Chrome OS.
Users and developers like you. About 2 years ago at Google I.O., we announced...
And there we go.
And bye, Sundar. It was nice hearing you mutter for a
while. Colleen Kelly is running like crazy.
Oh,
can we get this camera adjusted? Because I am slowly climbing uphill here, and I think eventually Tom's going to end up in my lap.
Come on.
Liz?
This we just need the camera level a little
bit. Our two shots a little tilted.
What matters, though, is that how people use Chrome.
So is his,
they
actually.
They live on it every day.
Up
every
in the right corner.
Every single day, there are over 60 billion words typed in Chrome. That is the equivalent of 100,000 textbooks.
60 billion words.
One terabyte of data. documents.
160 million active Chrome users, but it's now 310 million. So from last year, 160 to 310.
Chrome is all about speed. Just one feature in Chrome, the fact that when you're typing in the Omnibox, we try to guess where you go. We
60 billion words typed.
That feature alone saves 30 years of human lifetime every single day in Chrome.
30 years of lifetime saved by predicting what you're going to search for every day.
Oh, it's saving you that amount of time.
30 years of human lives.
13.
Google is, in fact, 13 years, sorry. Well, that's different.
13 years of time saved every day, distributed among... I didn't get 13 years. Darn it.
No, but think of it. That's a lot of productivity. Google has saved us.
Is it? I'm always skeptical of calling time saved productivity. I might have wasted it.
If I just staring at the search.
Yeah.
It was primarily the desktop web. Fast forward to today, almost all of you have smartphones. You have a computer at home, at work. You share your devices with family and friends.
Can you bring his level up a little bit?
You're buying tablets. So Chrome was built for a better web, but for today's web...
But they're having extreme issues, huh? Audio sounds awful.
So that your web is personalized, works consistent, and seamlessly across all your devices.
You haven't missed much. Sundar Pichai has come out. He's talking about how well Chrome is doing. Hasn't made any big announcements.
More fondly known internally as the inventor of incognito mode. Brian.
The inventor of incognito mode.
They are talking about using Chrome seamlessly across devices, which they've made great strides with syncing tabs and...
That's excellent.
And when you install an extension on one instance, it installs on the other instance.
The main reason I use Chrome. Everything gets copied over.
The only reason I don't use Chrome is because Google Docs doesn't work very well in it.
If you're like me, you probably use Chrome across a lot of different computers. In fact, you probably just use a lot of different computers. Computers, devices, phones,
all of them Macs, apparently.
And Chrome, the default operating or browser in Jelly Bean.
I use about 8 different computers on a regular basis, and I'm sure a lot of you use many more than that. So... to show you how Chrome makes that experience painless, moving across all these different devices to get stuff done, living life in the cloud, I'm going to show you what I do on just a typical day with Chrome. So here I am at home on my MacBook. Over breakfast, I'm reading news, catching up on current events. You see I've got a whole bunch of tabs open.
This just
here.
Seems to be a demo of
some
what
of
Chrome
read. Some of them
does.
I haven't read yet.
Is it possible that there's anybody in the audience here who doesn't
Chrome's
know
been
this?
Customized over the last several years of using Chrome. To have all of my settings, everything that makes Chrome work.
Tab syncing is great, I have to say.
Yeah.
But I'm running out of time. I got
to
get to work.
It does it to the Android phone now, too, as well.
Because I use my desktop at home most of the time, and I rely on that when I come to work.
Mm-hmm. Everything's there.
Not too bad of a commute today. Here I am on my Chromebook, and it turns out I use a different computer at work than I do at home. In fact, I use a lot of different computers at work. As a member of the Chrome team, we're always testing new hardware. We're always trying out
give it some more levels. Are you looking at the levels on him? He seems very low. Are we maxed out?
I end up using lots of different computers every day to get stuff done. Now, it turns out on this computer, I've never actually signed in. I don't have an account on this computer.
Turn us down then to match his level.
Because I've never used it before, I'll just sign in with my username and password. If I got that right, all my settings will start coming down from the cloud. So these are all the settings I showed you on my MacBook. And in addition, I've customized Chrome to start up with some work tabs when I'm at work.
Yeah, the developers know how this works. They all use it.
When I hit OK, you should see my work tabs just appear on the screen. And there they are.
Well, they're still pleased. Yeah, maybe not that particular group of developers, but somebody's
applauding. So you can see I've got my bookmarks here. All my settings are down here. Also, these tabs, I can get some work done. You can see... Tree is open.
Sometimes
good.
I do run into issues where I've been working on
incognito.
One machine and not
can't do it.
You can't
do
it.
But all this work is kind of making me hungry. It's time for lunch. Let's think about what to have. I feel like something salty, maybe a little bit more of a hearty meal. Some pork, maybe. I heard about this place, but I can't remember the name. Something to do with pig. Let me try this query. Let's see what happens. Salty
pork store.
Pig. Parts. Pocalone. Okay, that sounds like it might be the place. Let me click. Yes, that's what.
That's a tasty salted pig part right there.
In the
just
hope you're not a vegan.
In the ferry building. So let me click that.
Sarah's
okay,
not
too far. I can just walk there. So, leave work.
Oh, let's go. I'm ready to go. Pocalone, here I come.
I was so distracted by those pictures of delicious.
I think Tony Soprano is probably hanging.
That. I forgot exactly where the location of the place was. In fact, I wasn't paying attention to it at all. But it's not a problem because I've got Chrome installed.
Yeah, I bought some sausage.
And
I haven't seen one of those since eighth grade.
The projector?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll just.
I think it's digital, but otherwise it looks the same.
Open a new tab. And you can see all my recent devices. So you can see the Chromebook I had open at work. And
that by the way, is a huge feature. That's what I was mentioning. Android also syncs now.
And that page should load right here so I can see exactly where I need to go.
So you can see why this guy invented incognito mode, by the way.
Now, turns out we didn't just sync that URL. We also made sure that the back button works across pages. So after I've gotten in line,
your history
gets
synced
as well. I can start to look at the menu by tapping back. And I can even go back to
it. It can be embarrassing if all your tabs open at work.
So across devices as well.
Just saying.
I use Opera for that.
Right. You do have to have ICS or later on this.
Turns out I'm a little bit of a nerd. I carry a second device around with me when I want a bigger screen. I've got my brand new Nexus 7. And of course,
we had one
there too.
I got to play with it last night.
Jason brought it by?
No, Eileen's brought CNET home.
You couldn't borrow it.
I couldn't take the plastic off.
And
they're shooting.
Since I'm having this delicious sandwich, let's say I want to visit a site. It's a blog I haven't been to in a while. I think it's called a hamburger.
Very snappy.
Something about hamburgers. It showcases the best hamburgers every single day that they can find. So I'll just start typing. And because Chrome is synced, even though I've never typed this URL on this device before, typed it.
You're just joining us.
Computers.
No big announcements. They're kind of running through what Chrome does on the various platforms, showing how it syncs tabs and information across devices.
We started to load this page in the background because we know you're very likely to go there. So as soon as I tap this, it should be there waiting. Ready? 1, 2, 3. And the page is already loaded. So I can load a page there, enjoy my lunch. Everything will be delicious. So I've shown you.
This crowd, I would think you'd want to talk about SPDY and some of the other more technical innovations that are going on.
A phone, a tablet,
with Chrome.
All my settings, including my open tabs, my bookmarks, all the things that make Chrome work for me, synchronizing silently in the background, making it painless to live across all these different devices. But there's one more thing. I wanted to talk to you about. Some of you have been very persistently asking for one thing in particular. And before we agreed to do it, we wanted to make sure that we did an excellent job of it.
I'm very
happy to say that the team has really pulled something great out. So you're probably wondering what it is I'm talking about. People have been asking, you've been asking, to use Chrome on your iPhone.
Ah.
Whoa. Oh-ho. Oh,
okay, now we got our first big announcement.
So I'm happy to announce that later today, Chrome will be rolling out in the App Store.
Apple's approved
it. I'll give you a sneak preview now.
Now, the only issue, of course, on the iPhone is it can't be the default browser, which is a real drag.
Launch it, and it should look very familiar to any of you who've used Chrome on another device before. If you use Chrome on Android,
but if you just want to access those tabs,
you'll see it's got OmniBox.
That's fantastic.
It behaves just like you'd expect it to. You can open tabs. And as many tabs as you'd like.
Oh, it's interesting.
Click through them easily, quickly. It's a silky smooth experience.
That's really the Google Plus interface.
Select the one you're looking for. You can even close tabs.
It does the same thing.
The same guy's worked on it.
Yeah, very similar.
Now, how did they get Apple to agree to time the release?
You can even swap tabs.
You can do that.
Put stuff out whenever they want.
You can do that. You can actually do that. Developers are allowed to set a time.
Hold it until this day.
Yeah.
Okay. Makes browsing the web on your iPhone really fun.
Apple the last few years, has approved third-party browsers, but the big disadvantage and the reason they don't mind is because you can't be the default browser.
And they have to work on WebKit, right?
And I think you're right, yeah.
Yeah. Which is not a problem for Chrome.
Of that as well. Here's Chrome on the home screen of my iPad. Launch it.
And iPad 2, that's something I'll be using.
Definitely.
We've got a little bit more space to work
in preference.
With. Multitasking easier.
Just
got a bunch of tabs open here. And you can see they've started to pile up because I've got a few too many open. It's not unusual. But I can just push them out of the way to get to the one I'm looking for. It's a really nice overflow solution when you've got a lot of tabs open.
Yeah. E. Kardashinsky has a point saying Opera Mini is available for
Everything
iPhone. That's not a WebKit browser. So maybe you are allowed to...
Is Skyfire a WebKit? I guess there are some non-WebKit browsers on there.
Opera Mobile.
By the way, happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
I forgot to mention that.
Restaurant pages open on my iPhone.
You're the same age as Google Plus.
My Nexus 7, where I was looking at food over
two?
My lunch. You
one?
Can see the
one?
Salty pig parts query, which I backed up from
two.
On the Bocalone site. The work I did today, looks like I didn't get much work done at all. And you
this
can
is
see
great.
All those pages
I'm a big Chrome fan. I'm very glad to have that on all platforms because of that syncing that he demonstrated. This now kind of ties back into that.
Where I left off with one of those pages.
I tell you, if Google Docs Mobile Edition
the news,
would work better, I could use a tablet for almost everything I do. Given this, because now I have my history and tabs and bookmarks and things.
My credentials are synced across machines, even though I've never used the New York Times on this device before. I've never logged in. I can just
yes, Dr. Mom says I should buy you some Google glasses. I did put an order in for you for your birthday. So good luck. Bear has already offered to buy them from us.
We'll have to sell more bricks.
$1,500.
Now, one more feature before I quit. Incognito, a feature near and dear to my heart. The team did a great job with Incognito here. You can see it works just how you'd expect it to from other computers. You can toggle between regular and incognito windows.
Goodbye, Atomic Browser.
And I hope
Chrome mind. Incognito has
using
arrived.
Incognito on a touch device is a great experience.
Oh, wow.
Thank you.
Everybody's laughing because, of course, that's also known as porn mode.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder if I run it from here, if the audio will be better. Is it low coming to us?
Yeah, and I even opened it up on a different machine, and it didn't fix it. I switched it while we were just watching.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
We want to make sure it's about the user, your web working everywhere, personalized, consistent, always, anytime, anywhere. Of course, when you're living online and living in the cloud, you're using cloud applications. And at Google, we realized this, and in 2004, there was a profound shift on the web. The web shifted from documents...
I have Colleen's number. Should I text her to turn it up?
Interactive web applications.
She'll hate you.
And in 2004...
I know.
She hates me already.
No.
She already hates me. She just go, of course, Leo would text me to turn it up.
Since then, Gmail has grown
Colleen.
To reach 425 million active users, monthly unique users... And it's become a primary communication platform for all these users.
You're horrible.
We haven't stopped there. We've been very hard at work, and we've continually added more applications. Google Calendar, Google Documents, Google Spreadsheets, Google Presentations. And about 10 weeks ago, we launched Google Drive, a centralized place for you to create and collaborate online.
A Google spokesperson did say they'd have an announcement regarding Google Drive, so hopefully we'll be getting
that. This is that big Google Cloud thing. I guess the competitor for EC2 on Amazon.
But it's not just at home. There is a very powerful trend underway. We call this consumerization of businesses. It's the same person who leaves home and shows up.
Talk to Colleen in about 6 months.
And they demand
and I send her this.
Hey, turn it up.
Smartphones are a good example. People have demanded the same smartphones at work.
Yeah, old man.
The same is true for their applications as well. This trend has been so powerful, we are seeing many, many businesses are going Google. In fact, governmental agencies in 45 out of the 50 states in the U.S., including places like Department of Interior, have gone Google. 66 of top 100 universities in the United States have gone Google.
Gossip Girl.
And over 5 million businesses, the rate at which we are signing up businesses is growing steadily, have gone Google. This is a pretty fundamental shift. If you look at most businesses, they're
really
based
pressing
on
their enterprise advantage here.
The PC, which was a huge revolution,
somewhat dismissed
primarily
by
focused on automating your
the
individual
bigs that
workspace.
Have been in the business for a long time.
Fast
like
forward to today,
Oracle, et cetera.
Most companies care about collaboration deeply. And you're just not going to get there by using SharePoint or TPS reports. What you need is a radical different architecture to get there, which is why many, many large companies are going Google. You can see many big names up there. Let me give you one example. Roche, which has 90,000 employees, over 140 countries.
We use Google Docs pretty much for everything.
Google Apps customer.
Yeah.
And Roche
and
has decided to deploy Google
it's our across internal their provider entire employee base. Enterprise
so
services.
Very, very
CNET switched to Google.
Yeah.
For their, they got off Outlook.
Pretty compelling
we
argument.
Put together a few short videos to show you what it is like to go Google. Let's take
you like to complain about it, as you have been.
Well, yeah. I complained about Lotus Notes and Outlook.
But it's... Now what happened?
So, yeah.
Oh, he's played a video.
Good. I think that about wraps it up. So...
Great. I'll send a follow-up.
Why they love Hangouts.
I don't... There's nothing much to follow up on.
This is the at least third appearance of Hangouts.
It is one of the cooler things.
This is the regrouping.
Cool. I'll ping you later.
You're pinging me now. What do you want to ping about?
Next steps?
There are no next steps. We just solved it.
Huh. All right.
I don't want to work with that guy.
Yeah. A dick. Introducing Google Wave for business.
You know, using Google Docs sometimes surprises me.
It's very much like Google Wave. This is Google Wave. I'm not kidding.
It is.
She comes. She's
I'm doing a 20 questions interview with a guy for his website right now in Google Docs. It's exactly this.
She's really? 20 questions in Google Docs?
He asked me a question. I answer it.
How
we
funny.
Check back and forth.
She's a man gobbler.
I've seen eater. This. This is old.
She's a man eater.
You think that's actually Hall & Oates?
Yeah, it is.
That's cute.
Apparently.
Well, what are they doing? They're not that busy. That's
so
right, man gobbler.
This is a fundamental and a radically different way to collaborate. Just try doing that with SharePoint. So about 10 weeks ago...
Apparently Roche is writing songs now.
One more step in this journey.
Yeah.
In just over 10 weeks, over 10 million users have signed into Google Drive.
Oh, I keep calling it Docs. It's Drive, isn't it?
Well, Docs is part of Drive.
And third-party applications.
I'm not beholden to Google's spin. Data.
And this is did you say try doing that with SharePoint? That's kind of cold. You call me snarky.
Our journey with Drive. I'd like to invite Clay Bawar, Director of Product Management for Google Apps.
Yeah, Microsoft and Google are in a war of words over this stuff.
Yeah.
For sure.
Everybody's in a war. Everybody's taking pot shots at everybody else.
Thank you, Sundar. As Sundar said, Google Drive is all about making it really easy to live life in the cloud. And that starts by making all of your files available on all of your devices.
Gina Trapani also tweeted.
To do that, we built a really nice web
that
interface.
That Google Docs Dremo is Wave.
For Windows and for Mac.
She would know.
And she would know. Really she wrote nice the book.
She wrote the book on Wave.
But like
literally.
With Chrome, we want Drive to be available on every platform. And so today, I'm really excited to announce we're making it available
can you see my screen
on
chat
iOS
if I set that
and
up?
On Chrome OS.
Ah. Google Drive for iOS and Chrome OS.
Ah, this is very big. See, we should have done an iPad today.
Let me start here on iOS, here on the iPad.
Because it does not work great on the iPad right now.
No. It just doesn't work well
on mobile, frankly.
And you can see the interface is really, really fluid. It works just like you'd expect. You can browse through
scrolls,
dozens and dozens of file types here. I'll pull up a photo.
Just as I would expect.
It's a bigger photo than I remember. And... everything just works like you'd expect, but it's not just browsing that we've made available on the iOS experience. We brought a lot of the best features of Drive right to the mobile and tablet experience. So, for example, I'm going to open up this folder of receipts here. I'm a big nerd. I scan all of my receipts, but I was also too lazy to actually title any of these. But I know that somewhere in here, there's a receipt from the post office with a tracking number. So what I can do here is just search, and I'm going to type certified mail. I think that word was in there somewhere. And just like that, I can pull up the receipt.
Good point from Vin Man. He's saying, despite the fact Google has launched their own tablet, they're giving iOS users no reason to switch.
There's no text in here. I haven't written anything. Instead, we used optical character recognition
technology. That's interesting.
Technology.
They're applying that automatically to PDFs.
From the scan, index it, and then make it searchable. Hmm. Now, the cool thing is that doesn't just work with text. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I think they know people are going to buy iPads no matter what they do.
And it doesn't just work with tablets. It works with photos.
It's not their business is not selling tablets.
Yeah. Here I have a big pile of photos. I took a trip with my wife through Africa last year. And I know somewhere
Cracker
in
Dog
here
points
are
out,
photos of
Evernote already does that. Again, absolutely.
I didn't title my photos.
It's all about the ecosystem, not the functionality per se.
Just do a search. Up come the images of us at the pyramids.
Yeah, yeah, image recognition. You search pyramid, even though it's not titled pyramid.
That's pretty impressive. That's Google Goggles
technology.
Again, we
technology. Can actually use image recognition technology to peer inside of the images to actually understand the content. I don't have to do anything. No labels, no metadata, no nothing. It just works. So, of course, I don't always have an internet connection. And so Drive makes it really easy to just save things, cache them offline. So here, I'll just save this manual offline so I can read it whenever. And of course, at its core, Drive is about enabling sharing and collaboration. So I can add users to collaborate in documents with me right from the app. So here's, I think, a relevant document here. I haven't gotten very far, but I'm going to add Brian right here. He's now backstage.
He's referencing repelling gear regarding yesterday's.
I've added him right there. So we'll come back to that in a second. So that's Google Drive on iOS. It's available for iPad, iPhone, iPod Touch later today. Check it out. We think you'll like it.
I might. I didn't say anything about spreadsheets. That's just me.
If there's any way we can get one of these Nexus 7s.
Drive on Chrome OS.
Today.
So
I'd sure like
Drive
to look
on
at
Chrome
it.
OS, what we did was actually integrate it deep into the operating system. So what I can do here is I'm just going to open up my application tray, open up files. And basically, Google Drive is just the file system. It's your hard drive in the cloud, and we sync down everything silently so that you have all of your stuff whenever you need it, everywhere, right there. So, of course, Drive does a lot more than just sync your files to the cloud. It enables some amazing applications, and one of those is real-time collaboration in the cloud with applications like Google Docs. So I'm going to open up this document here. Oops. There we go. And I'm also going to pull it up on my smartphone and on my tablet. Here's on my smartphone.
Someone's writing, don't be too big a nerd, limit Game of Thrones references.
That's wow. Pretty good.
Yeah.
I like it. Has he made any Game of Thrones references?
I don't think he's made one yet.
Show some
lolcats. Wow, he's got lots of people collaborating with him in there. He's not typing anything. They're all putting lolcats in there.
This is, by the way, what always happens when you do this.
And here's everything synced across all of my devices. Right, keystroke by keystroke, I can see these edits. Everything just works. Now, this last point is an important one. Google Docs works great if you're connected to the internet, but what if you're on a plane or you don't have a connection? What about then? We've been thinking about that. And we're really excited to announce
took away
that today,
the capability to
Google
do that.
Documents works for editing offline.
How?
I think they realized Gears was not the right implementation. That's why they got
rid
of it.
Let me show you how this works. So what I'm going to do is we've turned off wireless on the laptop here, and I'm just going to unplug the Ethernet cable. So there it is. It's unplugged.
It's like a magic
And just to prove to you that
no
I
wires.
Am, in fact, offline, New York Times. No connection, but I can just go back to my Google Doc, and I can keep editing, just like I'm online.
Now, that's pretty good.
All the formatting still works, and you'll see that Google Docs, it's just noticed gracefully. I'm offline. All of my changes are just saved locally to a local cache.
Fantastic.
And I can keep on without even thinking about it. It all just works without even noticing.
So you don't have to sync ahead of time. It just keeps track.
What I'm going to do now.
And what happens if you don't have that document
offline,
loaded?
Maybe Brian and folks backstage.
You do have to save it. You're right.
More changes. I'm going to close this document. All my changes are saved. I'm going to plug Ethernet back in.
Yeah, how does it sync back up?
Well, that's, of course, the merging issue is going to be
tough. Now watch what happens when I open the document, because it's going to happen pretty quickly. I'm going to open it back up in Drive, and like that, it's going to be synced back to the cloud, and you'll see it across all of my
devices.
This
is the new windowed interface for Chrome OS,
so let me open up the Drive web interface.
You're right.
Here it is. I'm going to open up this document and get ready, because it happens quick.
You'd never see a desktop before.
There is, and there it is.
Uh-huh.
Merges it in.
Everything.
I would guess if there's conflicting edits that it would somehow show you that.
Yeah, I'd like to see what happens when
and
it's like, wait a
minute.
Once you've
shown the feature, move on to the next thing. So that's Google Documents working offline. Hmm. It's available today. We're working on offline presentations and spreadsheets. Those are coming soon. But if you're flying back from Google I.O. and you don't have internet on the plane, try out Google Docs. It works great. We think you'll really love it. So Google Docs offline.
I will try it today.
And is that Chrome OS only? Did they?
They just said cloud, so...
Now, if we could just go to
you
the
web, Google Drive any web browser. Apparently, use Google. I would guess it uses
Google
Drive.
You need the app,
that
of course.
Google Drive makes possible. But users can also create and edit and share all sorts of stuff with dozens and dozens of third-party applications that have integrated with Google Drive using the Google Drive SDK. We've actually just updated our SDK to version 2 today. And let me show you what's possible with this SDK. So as a user, what I can do is go to the Chrome Web Store, add additional apps that integrate with Drive, and they just show up here in the More menu. So I can fax, I can send and receive faxes with HelloFax right from Google Drive, so you can get rid of your fax machine and just have faxes come straight to Drive. I can create and edit images and videos and charts. And now the neat thing about the way the
integration I might have to start having faxes come to my Google Voice number.
Third-party applications, they're stored alongside everything else, just like regular files. So I've created a couple of diagrams for Google I.O., and I just click that. And notice I don't have to log in or authenticate. It just launches the file. It opens the application. It takes a couple seconds. And then we're in Lucidchart, one of my favorite applications. You know, this is a really deep statement here. So one of the neat things about Drive is our developers, not only do they get access to millions and millions of users, authentication, sharing, Google Drive storage, but they're telling us that their users that come from Drive are actually more active than users that come to their applications directly. So Lucidchart tells us that their users, when they come from Drive, because of the sharing and ease of creation, create 3 times more diagrams. HelloFax users send 25% more faxes. SlideRocket users are 3.5 times as likely to create a presentation. So developers are seeing really, really great distribution using Drive. We actually have a session right after this at 11:45 in room 8 on the Drive SDK. I actually this morning just whipped up a little diagram to help get you there in case you're interested. Room 8, 11:45. So that's the Google Drive SDK. Version 2 is coming out today. We're really excited about it. You also saw Google Drive for iOS and for Chrome OS and Documents now working offline. So we're really excited about where we're taking Google Drive. We hope you'll join us. Thanks very much.
No Google Drive for Linux. Sorry, folks.
Still, that's surprising.
Thank you, Clay.
Yeah, if you make it for Chrome
OS. So just like Chrome, Google Cloud applications, Google Drive now also works on Windows, Mac, Android, iOS, Chrome OS. Across all your platforms and all your devices so that you can live online in the cloud seamlessly. So we are very excited by that. About a few years ago, we set out on this journey to really help users live in the cloud to design an end-to-end computing experience. And that's what the Chrome OS journey is all about. A year ago, at Google I.O., we launched our first-generation Chromebooks. Our goal was to get the product out there, help seed the market, get feedback from developers like you. Since then, we've been hard at work. We release a version of the operating system every 6 weeks and automatically update it to all Chromebooks out there. There are no versions, no downloads, no installs. We constantly update them. We brought it all together about 3 weeks ago for the next generation Chromebooks. There are three main aspects to it. First of all, they're significantly faster. They are about 3x faster than the first generation Chromebooks. Thanks to faster processors, and the entire software stack is now hardware accelerated. So it's really fast and smooth, as fast as, you know, computers which are around $1,000.
I know he said hardware accelerated, but it did say sound like hardware X-rated. I'm just saying.
Of that earlier, it is
maybe that's what you hear. Incognito mode on the mind.
So you're no longer tied to a browser window. You can have full screen experiences. You can have applications side by side, multiple windows. You can pin them to the taskbar, etc. And we are really investing in the application ecosystem. You saw examples with Google Drive working on it, and important applications like Google Documents now working offline. One of the things which excites about it is we call it the always new computer. Since we updated automatically, even people who bought the first generation Chromebook, a lot of them wrote to us 3 weeks ago and said they opened their computer, it got faster, and they have a whole new window manager at work, just like that. So we are very excited by the model we are working on, and we are going to be investing a lot more here. One of the feedback, the last version was well received, but more people wanted to get their hands on and see what these are like. So as of today, we're going to make Chromebooks available in physical retail, 100 Best Buy stores all across the United States, so that users can try them and buy them. We are doing the same in UK with Dixon's as well. As we go through the next few months,
here at SFO in Terminal 2, the Virgin America terminal, they have a Chromebook lending program.
They still do it. I know they had it for a long time.
For your flight, and you drop it off when you land.
I was inspired by taking a tour of our data center, just walking inside them and seeing hundreds and hundreds of computers powering applications like Google Search, and we had just launched Gmail, and seeing the scale of the infrastructure needed was inspiring. But it is very hard for web developers externally to get access to that kind of infrastructure. We want you to write great web applications, and so we've been thinking hard about how to provide you with the same quality of infrastructure we enjoy at Google. To do that, I want to invite Urs Hotzlay, our first VP of engineering, one of the first 10 employees at Google, wow, the person more than anyone responsible for building all of Google's infrastructure. Urs.
Thank you, Sundar. We've heard a great thing, a great many things today about applications, clients, but I'm here today to talk about
Colleen turned it up. Thank you, Colleen.
And the infrastructure that powers all these applications.
She's studiously ignoring my text.
A long time ago, at Google, we started working very hard to build the world's fastest, most scalable, and most reliable infrastructure. We needed our infrastructure to deliver incredible scale and incredible performance at a very low cost. And over the years, we built one of the world's largest set of data centers and one of the world's largest networks to connect these data centers. And then we started looking at ways to deliver that infrastructure to you.
This must be the
EC2 announcement. So that you can build great applications for your users. And so in 2008, we launched App Engine. App Engine lets you write simple, intuitive code to build your apps, and then we take them, and we manage them, and we scale them for you. So if you have one request per second or 1,000 requests per second, it just works. We're thrilled about
the
popularity
of
App Engine.
Today, keeping track.
It's supporting over 1 million active applications, 7.5 billion hits per day, every day, and 2 trillion data store operations per month. That easily makes it the largest public NoSQL data store infrastructure in the world. Thank you. So more and more developers are using App Engine, and every day we hear success stories from them. Here's one from Japan, where earlier this month, a fully one-third of Japan was watching a national song contest. And App Engine was powering the live streaming and the voting for this event.
That sounds like a violation.
It ran at 24,000 requests per second.
Jeez.
Yet, no other App Engine user noticed that this was going on. So the ability to sail through this kind of traffic spike allows you to focus on your application while we focus on handling the traffic. So we're very proud of what App Engine has enabled all of you developers to do. But many of you have said you want even more options. And specifically, you've told us that you want virtual machines on demand with industry-leading performance, with industry-leading scalability, and so easy and cheap to run that you'd prefer them to your in-house servers. Well, today, I'm going to show you what it is like to run in Google's cloud. I'm here to announce Google Compute Engine, infrastructure as a service that delivers the kind of performance and scale and value.
There it is. Google Compute Engine.
Oh, you haven't seen anything yet. Thanks. But the infrastructure as a service that delivers the performance and scale and value that only Google can deliver. So Compute Engine gives you Linux virtual machines at Google scale. Spin up 2 VMs or 10,000 VMs, it just works. You have multiple storage options. You have high-performance networking between VMs so that you can form them into a cluster.
So as opposed to App Engine, which lets you run an app, this is an entire operating system. Linux only, though, and that's one thing Amazon offers is you can roll your own OSs.
One of our best is Azure. Was the Institute for Systems Biology. The ISB...
Linux is probably, I would guess, 90% or more of what...
Well, that makes sense why they would start with that, and they just need to negotiate some licensing agreements.
...that signal the potential for new cancer drugs. They wrote an App Engine app...
Or they may not care.
To Compute Engine,
I'm also wondering what version of Linux...
And you'll see it here on the screen. Here. They show the human genome in a circular form.
Get you the information.
And the application allows researchers to visually explore the associations between genes, mutations, and other factors. And each of these associations is shown with a blue line like that. Now, this may look simple, but this kind of analysis requires a tremendous amount of computation. So ISB built an in-house cluster with 1,000 nodes to handle this kind of computation. Yet it still took them 10 minutes to compute just a single association using the entire cluster. Mm. So fortunately, it took only a few days to port this application to Compute Engine. And let's see how Compute Engine performs on this application. Now remember, on their in-house 1,000-core cluster, what you would see here is one line appear, click, and then you'd wait for 10 minutes to see the next line.
Oh, this is going to be...
So let's see what Compute Engine can do with this.
Wow.
All
several,
right.
Several.
So this is what happens when you add 10,000 cores to your application. Instead of it taking 10 minutes, you get a new association every few seconds. That's the kind of scalability and performance that Google can deliver. And so today, anyone with large-scale computing needs can now access this same infrastructure with Compute Engine virtual machines. And this infrastructure comes with a scale and a performance and a value that is unparalleled in the industry because you benefit from the efficiency of Google
Test
data
123 in the chat room says, let's crack some keys.
What you get from Google is not just the scale, but also amazing stable performance. So our virtual machines and storage are predictably fast, so you can rely on a consistent level of performance, no matter who else is running on Compute Engine right now.
Well, yeah, this could save schools and research institutions a lot of money because they don't have to roll their own supercomputers.
Sure.
For example, when Invite Media ported their ad server from another cloud provider to Compute Engine, they were able to double the number of connections that each single VM can accept using VMs of comparable size. And more importantly, they were able to reduce the number of connection errors by over a factor of 10 because of the predictable performance. You can hear more directly from Compute Engine beta users in the technical sessions about Compute Engine, which you will see show up on your I.O. calendar after this talk. So be sure to check them out. Now, finally, we know that you want top scalability and top performance, but you also need value. And Compute Engine is a great value, delivering up to 50% more compute per dollar than other cloud providers. So you don't have to choose between getting the best performance and getting the best price. We worked very hard for a decade to lower the cost of computing, and we're passing these savings on to you.
Thank you.
Compute Engine is now open in limited preview, and it's amazing to finally be able to talk about this. It's amazing to see 10,000 cores working for a single application and what that can do. So 10,000 cores, I think that's really cool. But you know what's really cool? Well, we know that some of you need even more scale, and we have the technology to help you. For computations that are very, very computationally intensive, but don't need that much I/O, we can scale much, much higher. You may have noticed this ticker counting up since the start of my presentation.
Well, not well, this actually
ticker
moving, but
is not a conceptual counter. It shows the actual count of the number of cores available to the Genome app right now, and they've all been added since the beginning of this presentation. So what would you say to 770,000 cores available to your app?
Free?
Am I supposed to clap there?
Huh?
There was a pause. People were like,
oh. Yeah, I'll take it.
Are you asking me?
So if you're ISB, you would say, actually, my app kind of taps out at 600,000 cores. It doesn't scale any further.
Apparently.
So let's leave 170,000 idle and allocate 600,000 to the genome app, and let's see how fast it runs. Switch to the app. Right? There's a little initial delay. And then
wow.
We really get going.
Wow. Each line is 10 minutes in their 1,000 core cluster.
Uh-huh.
yeah, you can see how that would be very desirable for 600,000 cores.
So this is the same computation now running on 600,000 cores. That is cool. Right? And that is how infrastructure as a service is supposed to work. So this, ladies and gentlemen, truly is the best time ever to deliver and to build for the web. You now have access to the scale and performance of Google's infrastructure at a great price. And it's up to you to figure out how to make the best use.
He never said the actual price. He just said it was cheaper than everything else. So details probably coming in a later session or press release. Services like that are priced more complex than $199.
I was jumping up back there when I saw the 600,000 cores, the kind of scale which you could only dream about. So
that's the real point, is no matter what the cost,
now have access to what we've had internally,
it's something that's just not doable
for most
people.
Can't wait to see what you all build next.
Yeah, to build it themselves, no way.
Of course, infrastructure is only one component of writing great web applications. The other thing is the actual
platform. And it's going to be cheaper than doing it yourself.
And we've been working hard with a lot of you and other browser vendors and the open web community to advance that forward. What you're seeing behind me, let's switch to the visualization, please. What you're seeing behind me is the visualization of how the web platform has evolved over the years. It's inspiring and humbling to see names like Mosaic, Netscape, the introduction of HTML, CSS. But what's interesting is as you go to the far right, you can see it gets denser. It's much richer. That's because the web platform is evolving at a faster pace than ever before, which makes sense because the web is increasingly being used across many, many new types
of
devices.
I have no idea what that graphic is.
I think it's browser platforms, and it includes mobile
browsers, maybe? We evolve the web to support those use cases.
Maybe.
The good news is it's happening
very fast. Okay. So what are the axes?
As we add usage,
time is the x-axis. What's y?
Immediately take advantage of it to write great web applications. So let me give one example. About a year and a half ago, from the Chrome team, we decided to support games, rich games, online. Why? Games tend to push the limits of a platform. They're really hard on the platform, and if you can run games, you can pretty much do anything else.
Y so equals awesome.
Game developers.
Thanks.
And we found out what APIs they need. A lot of it was what we were already working on, and we started adding them to Chrome. So let's take a look at what's happening. So let's switch to a game. Can is going to help me with it. What we are showing you.
Angry Birds.
Can
any
you switch
bets?
To the game, please.
What
we are showing
be?
You
Doom.
Is a game called Gaikai, which is being
pretty.
Streamed. It's a service
it's
called
web,
Gaikai.
WebGL.
This is being streamed live online.
Well, Gaikai is like
do
online.
It to any internet-connected
right.
devices. There is no download. There is no install. You just click and play different games. This particular game is called Bulletstorm, and I've been assured all you do is shoot aliens in this process. So let's take a look. So Ken is going to load up the game and play.
Heat for last,
and what you'll notice
is
that, first of all, it's a rich full screen experience. It's very immersive.
It's okay. It's just aliens.
The sound effects are all enhanced audio APIs we have added in the last year. To do a game like this, you need real good performance. You need raw network access. We do it through UDP. The local performance on the client you see there.
The people play games like this are just not going to be happy with this frame rate and this performance. I'm sorry.
And finally, to do something like this, obviously, Ken is using a gamepad.
But there's a lot of people using OnLive and Gaikai because of the convenience.
So doing that, you can see a very, very rich game. By the way, it's running in a Chromebox, so you can spin it around because everything is hardware X-rated. So it's not just Gaikai and Bulletstorm which have done this. We have seen several, let's switch to the slides. We've seen several mainstream games, Angry Birds, Cut the Rope, all available in the Chrome
Web Store. I do think yesterday was the first
headshot
in a keynote speech from a major company.
You're probably right about that.
Now to play. Angry Birds alone has been played by more than 140 million users. And what's happening in games is happening in every other vertical in the Web Store. Games, entertainment like music, educational apps, and apps for businesses as well. Over 750 million applications have been installed, and people are enjoying living online in the cloud every day. And we are just getting started. We are going to evolve Chrome apps pretty significantly. There are three major areas we are going to focus on.
Good point. First, Infallible says this is probably also the first close-up of salted pork parts in our
I think definitely.
So as you write a Chrome application, we are going to provide developers with a way to package resources automatically by default, including the UI, so that you can always serve the application locally. The second thing is, we want to make sure you get an authentic app experience, just like what you saw with the game earlier. So we want to break out of the browser window when you want to, give full screen experiences, as well as provide new UI containers for applications. And finally, when you write a Chrome application, we want to make sure you have access to every underlying device API across phones, tablets, and desktops. So we are working hard at that. If you download the Chrome Canary build, you can see what we are doing there, and we have sessions later in the day where you can get a lot more details. It is one thing to write great web applications, but it is an entirely different thing to take a real-world experience, something with amazing artistry, like what Cirque du Soleil creates, and translate that to the cloud. Something very hard to do.
Cirque du Soleil in the cloud.
Journey, let me invite Joanne and Aubrey from Cirque du Soleil.
Some Latin joke there.
I don't even understand what the... Why would you put Cirque du Soleil in the cloud? I wonder if she's related to Nathan Fillion.
All those Fillions
Thank
are related.
Hello, everyone. It's great to be here.
Nope.
For those of you who know Cirque du Soleil, and I hope many of you do, you will understand that we always strive to create immersive and fantastical experiences for our patrons. Experiences that will make them dream for a little while. We also constantly ask ourselves, how do we evolve beyond the live world? How do we create experiences that reach more people? How do we create worlds that people participate in? The web is an obvious option because it can reach anyone on the planet. However, we know how difficult it is to transport anyone into an imaginary world.
I don't think he's French Canadian.
If they can't actually experience it firsthand. In this project, we were still facing the same big question. Could the web deliver the experience we envision? Could the technology give the possibility to the user to actually interact with the environment and lose themselves in it? To create this new world, we knew we needed to go beyond text, pictures, and videos. We all really wanted to evoke people's emotion, to awaken their imagination, and to enrich their lives. But I have to say, when we saw the preliminary result of this project, we all got so excited. We were surprised. Some of us were actually really touched and stunned, I would say, by the depth and the richness of the visual animation. The creative team and this new technology have created an experience that evokes a beautiful, immersive, and sensorial world that truly resembles Cirque du Soleil, and that can be enjoyed by everyone when and where they feel it. The combination of great creative minds and this new web technology.
I'm just baffled by what they're selling here. I don't
know existed before.
Is this Cirque du Soleil online?
I will let Aubrey, our development partner, to show you what we built together.
Second life in the Cirque du Soleil universe.
For you guys, how we built it, Aubrey.
Thanks, Joanne. It's awesome. This is awesome to be here. Cirque du Soleil in a browser. What a fantastic challenge. Let's take a look at our demo and see how we did.
If anything is more live performance focused than Cirque du Soleil, I don't know what it is.
In order to get you into the experience in a different way, we allow you to control the navigation and perspective by moving your body. As the experience starts,
it's VRML.
Our shows us how to do it. We've used the Get User Media API inside WebRTC to enable the user's camera and detect faces and track motion, and then we map that back to the navigation controls in the app. Ken, can you move left and right and show that behavior? There he goes. You'll notice Ken's silhouette at the bottom as he moves. This gives him some feedback about where he is in space. And then once our guide feels
it's
like
connect in the browser,
she opens up the curtains, and we're invited into her imaginary world. I love it when something very complex turns out to be created with simple ingredients. We've created this world completely in HTML. We've combined web video and images and markup into virtual set pieces, which we then position in 3D space using CSS. You can see how the elements
that's actually pretty impressive. We can do this all with CSS and
HTML.
That's
because the elements are each positioned individually, and it creates this very realistic, interactive environment for us to explore.
I think that's why it's so hard to explain, because it's not a game.
It's just an interactive environment for us to explore.
And it's all amazingly fast because of hardware-accelerated rendering in the browser. What you're seeing here is all running on a Chromebook.
That's
after exploring this
kind
world,
of stunning.
We just need to follow our guide and take the leap.
This is not exactly high-end hardware.
This is a reaction
to
HTML5 will never replace Flash.
We wanted to accentuate the 3D nature of this experience with this fall. You might consider using a plugin or WebGL to accomplish something like this. But what you're seeing here is just divs. We've used
individual CSS
animations to spin the elements, and we've used one long 3D transform.
That is an impressive, especially for developers, that's an impressive demo. They're not using WebGL or any kind of hardware-accelerated stuff. It's just CSS and HTML.
We have one long 3D transform, which transforms the whole model. And at the end of the fall, we splash into a vernal pool where we can enjoy a performance. Now, to see how this world is actually put together, let's take a look at the source. I'm feeling brave. Ken, can you open up the Chrome Developer Tools?
Who's the source, Luke?
Because this is just markup in the browser, we can actually manipulate these elements.
Cut the lower third so we can see
this. Right while the application is running. Here, Ken is able to change the
WebKit transform rotate. Makes that guy spin around in a bubble.
The whole model will move in space. Our navigation controls will even still work here and just transforms the elements from their new position. Now, another great thing about this approach is that it's wonderfully portable. For example, it works just as well in a web browser on a tablet. Ken, will you bring up the app on a device?
And what device would that be?
Oh, look, there it is. Here we can take advantage of the unique capabilities in a device, like the accelerometer and gestures. Notice as Ken tilts
see now
the device,
why Google
perspective is changing.
Put a front-facing camera in the Nexus 7.
Tracking to the camera. And it just happens for us because CSS is giving the instructions, and we're letting the hardware-accelerated browser, in whatever runtime we find ourselves in, do all the work.
Padre SJ points out that this is as a developer's conference. This is a developer's demo, and that's exactly right. It's to show you what you can do with HTML5.
Using the HTML skills I bet most of you already have, and a great browser like Google Chrome. Thanks.
That's quite impressive.
Yeah, it's a technology demo. That's pretty crazy.
And it is, of course, Google's goal to get people to use HTML5.
I've been very impressed by watching Cirque du Soleil live, and to see that come online shows you the power of what you can do on the web.
That was an iPad they were using?
It's been a very exciting journey, and a lot of it started with Chrome, and we built it together with our users and developers like you. None of what we showed today would have been possible without the journey of Chrome, and so we put together a short video to recap what the journey has been like with you all. So let's take a look.
Remember?
Yeah. Is it just the journey today, or, I mean, this has been a long journey already.
Download Chrome for Windows Vista.
Replay some of the highlights from the last hour. What is Chrome?
It's that browser I can only use on
today
XP.
Today I want to be talking to you about HTML5, to interesting aspects of the new standard.
It's really interesting because this is such an indirect moneymaker for Google. I mean, they charge nothing for any of this. And really, remember, Google's revenue comes from advertising. So,
makes you search.
Yeah.
When you search, you see the
ads. It's really such an indirect business model. But they have said, the more you use the net, the more we make. So, good, the Dalai Lama playing around on Hangouts. That's cute. Now, of course, they'll make money, I presume, on cloud computing. They make money on apps.
Well, yeah, the Google Compute Engine.
Google Apps and the Compute Engine. But really, they're still mostly advertising. And I think that they don't particularly plan to change that. But they do want you to use Chrome, and they want you to use it mobily. DC points out in our chat room, 15 years ago, could you have imagined that all this functionality would be available for free? And no, it's really an interesting business model. I'm a believer in ad-supported media. That's what we do.
Sure.
And it's really interesting to see that model moved to functionality on the internet. It seems to be working.
So it's been an exciting journey, and we really need your help to do what's next. And so we thought the best way to package all the goodness you saw today and give it to all of you. And there's no better way for us to do that than literally give you all a Chromebox, the brand new Samsung Chromebox, which...
That's nice.
Which,
and I regret now giving Kevin Marks my Google I.O. to date. It's got about $1,200
space in your Android developer pack
stuff.
In addition to the three devices.
A Nexus phone,
the
Nexus 7 tablet,
what you all make
a Q, and now
a
Chromebox.
We rely on the help of developers like you to succeed in what we do and help users live online. So we hope you continue to develop a lot of great web applications, and we will see you next year. Thank you.
So Sundar Pichai, who is in charge of Chrome OS and the Chromebook team leaving the stage at Google I.O., that was the Chrome presentation, but I doubt we're done, so let's keep
Yeah, Victor Dotra kicked us off.
Wait a minute. There's Sergey on the roof. Now what? You're on. Sergey, you're
live.
On.
We're go?
Yes.
Okay. Hey, everybody.
Like when we use the light.
Welcome here to a beautiful day in San Francisco. We're on the roof of the
Moscone Center. I know we showed you something really special yesterday, and we got so much interest that we want to show you how we put it all together. And actually, we want to show you some of the pretty same exciting action that you saw, but from a new perspective this time. So you can see this is the roof. Some of our bikers are warming up out
it's
there.
It's my understanding that someone we
doing some of their
know pretty well is involved
their,
in the production of this.
Part of this demonstration.
Besides Colleen.
You can also see that the
is
airship
it?
One of our neighbors.
Is actually overhead. It's pretty close to the sun. I don't know if we can get a camera on that. You might be able
Acre
to
coffee.
See through my view, through my glass yes. in the Hangout. And
he is Tony Stark, isn't he, Kevin says.
A of the jumpers in the Hangout now. Now, as I walk over here, you'll see that it's actually tricky to keep them in the Hangout because of the really challenging wireless
now,
environment.
This is interesting, these parabolic antennas they're aiming.
And if I can show you all on here, we're pointing each of these dishes using different kinds of RF technology for redundancy. Each jumper has a different piece of technology
that
coming down.
That explains how they did
and
that.
And that's how we felt comfortable that we could maintain at least... a couple of them in the Hangout. I'm also, by the way, testing out the new
See, they have sights
with these, shade clip-ins
attached
here
right to those antennas.
And they're definitely makes it better out here in the bright sun. So we're going to
kind of love Sergey after this.
I love him. I adore him.
I mean, I always liked him, but
you could buy Lanai or you could do this. And he's doing this. And I'm great. You got to admire it.
Physical offices, Oakland and San Jose.
He takes a great joy in technology and what it can do. And it's very experimental.
Let's see. We are jump masters here. This is Marshall.
And I love it that they're demonstrating how they did it now.
Yeah. That's, and you can tell he just loves telling.
Yeah.
Okay, that's super exciting. And you guys might be able to see their perspectives right now in the Hangout live. This is pretty exciting to me. How's, have you heard from JT? How are they doing?
So they are
there?
Doing it again.
Door. They're going to fly their wingsuit northwest of us right here, deploy their parachutes, and then you and I will be out here, and it will be high fives and smiles when they land.
All right, awesome. So since we only have a couple minutes, why don't you guys walk with me? I want to get closer to their landing zone.
And just, you know, stunt and, bicyclists in the background.
You know, as we go here, I can just point out, I mean, it's just stunning here. But if you look over there...
Stage the whole thing again. It looks like they
walk toward the landing
zone. They're definitely doing the jump again.
Fog bank right over there. And that fog bank is actually very scary to us. It seems to be clearing out, so we feel good about the jump today. But there was no guarantee. And in fact, I should note that skydiving, you know, there's no such thing as instrument skydiving. You actually have to see your landing. Though I guess conceivably with glass, you could make an instrument version. You know, you got a nice heads-up display where you're going. But anyway, we'll have to try that another time. I know I'm scaring my jump master. Anyway, today we have...
Now, this is live. Of course it's live because Sergey was on stage during this yesterday.
Pretty much straight overhead.
Yes, he's capable of being in two places at once.
We have a few cameras scattered here that can show you that.
Beautiful view of the Golden Gate Bridge there on the center right.
Keep walking here.
I believe he didn't have shorts on yesterday, too.
Yeah. I wonder if they planned this or if it was such a success yesterday, they said, let's do it again.
I don't want to block your view. Hopefully, hopefully the audience is seeing right now. How's our Hangout going?
We will get to Windows Weekly shortly after the coverage of the Google I.O. conference concludes. I have a feeling this might go on for a while, however.
Okay. So cool.
Well, they've got their first session of the day scheduled for 11:45. Right. Doesn't mean they won't go over it, but that's their itinerary.
As well as yesterday did, but you know, you never know. A million things can go wrong. Okay, take it away, JT.
Yeah.
JT's the flight master.
Got lucky with that fog. Good job calling ahead on that one, Sergey. Having it just kind of push away.
I can see the cabin from here.
Perfect.
I mean, it's obviously high up. It's kind of hard to spot from here if the door is open.
They'll be slowing down and hovering right before they...
You know, if Mark Zuckerberg can wear Adidas shower sandals, I think Sergey Brin can wear Crocs. No problem.
Has he got Crocs on?
Yeah. Look at that shot. It is a gorgeous day in San Francisco.
There's a chase helicopter, yeah.
And they are fairly lucky because...
2 days in a row, clear in downtown San Francisco.
Yeah.
That's...
And, you know, I'm so excited that today, you know, yesterday was really fun, but I was down in the auditorium. And by the way, for those of you who are actually watching at I.O., you can see it from the lobby. You might not be able to see quite the skydiver angle, but you'll be able to see some of the other activity that we have. For those of you who are in downtown San Francisco, this would probably be a good time to peek out your windows.
Yeah. So I think that's the Airship Ventures Zeppelin that they've rented.
Do you know when the door is open?
And that Zeppelin does tours.
I think Eileen has been on it. Has she?
I've been on it too. Yeah.
Maybe I'll.
I went on one of its maiden voyages back when they first launched the idea, and it's been successful.
Is how noisy it is in that cabin. It doesn't seem like it's very noisy.
It's not terribly noisy.
Really quiet.
Most of the noise comes from the, you know, climate control stuff.
So we're going to see them actually.
Beautiful shot
from the door here. Well, you'll be seeing the first person.
I'm surprised Google didn't brand it on the Zeppelin.
For those of you in San Francisco,
I'm surprised too.
Area.
I think that's definitely possible because I've seen different advertisements on. In fact, there's an advertisement on the other side that they keep being careful not to show.
Is that the vodka ad?
I don't know.
All right.
There's a vodka ad in the last one
okay,
I saw.
Okay, and we should get a countdown momentarily.
Yeah. Geeks love this kind of stuff.
You can see they're pretty much right over the Intercontinental Hotel.
Love his Crocs.
And Marshall, who's
at least he's not wearing bright red ones as I
do.
Must
be warm downtown San Francisco today.
Yeah, it looks like he's dressed for warm weather. There's a lot of sun on that roof, and it's white, and it probably is fairly warm on the roof.
Good morning, San Francisco. Hey, how are the winds doing down there?
You couldn't pick a better day, I think, for this.
We don't have the panicked rush to get this on air.
No, they're taking their time on this one.
See you in a few. Airship's almost straight overhead. It's a beautiful day. We're really lucking out that the fog is holding back. Doors open.
I get the feeling that Sergey is just messing with the timeline for these.
Oh, yeah, because he can. He's
just barged in and like, I'm going to jump some people out of a Zeppelin, all right?
I'm doing it. I don't care what your timeline is.
It's too cool not to do.
Pleasure of owning a company.
Yeah.
Three, two, one.
There they go.
And there they are. There they are.
What a view.
Yeah.
You can see them flying.
What a view. It looks just like Google Maps.
It does. Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
It's the same exact view. Look at that.
Look like gophers. Squirrels or something.
Yeah, squirrel suits.
Close in and out of each other. The hang-up footage, I'm sorry, and I don't have it. A monitor here.
It's working very well, Sergey.
Their chutes are opening. We got two chutes open. And the third one with a puff of smoke just opened. If you're wondering why...
I now know why San Francisco allowed this. It is a great advertisement for San Francisco.
So the radio aiming folks could know which skydiver was theirs.
Why don't we walk over here and get in position? We'll try to get...
The hangout. View of this is so impressive. We look down at those little chicklets at the bottom, and you see the multiple perspectives on the city as they all fall towards it.
Yeah. I think forget keynotes from now on. Google should just do extreme sports events.
They should get Vic and Sundar and Bara and just throw them all out of a Zeppelin, and they talk about their products as they fall to Earth.
And, oh, by the way, you're all getting a brand new Chromebox.
You can see them clearly. You can now have a little bit of room here. Give us 30 feet or so. All right.
So if you're just tuning in, Google announcements today include Chrome for iOS.
Here comes JT right here.
Offline editing for Docs, both available later today. There's a nice landing. Look at that.
I thought he was going to miss it there for a second. He's good.
And Google Compute Engine, which allows you to run Linux with several hundred thousand cores if you've got a really big scientific problem. An EC2 style companion to Google's App Engine.
That was amazing. All of our jumpers are down. And they make it look so easy.
Google announced
that
Google Drive, formerly Google Docs, now has 10 million users. And now we're watching a live repeat of yesterday's demonstration.
Don't forget, we tested...
repeat performance.
That was an amazing jump. We have more in store to show you, just how did we do the rest of it. We have our excellent bikers here, and, this is a really
fun they just trashed the Google
here.
TV announcement?
There are a few
announcement,
so and things, but...
They're running out of time. I don't know.
Because the roof goes up and down, there's a really great ramp that we put in there. And that was where you saw that magical
moment.
What's
the insurance?
So maybe
this,
we can actually get a chance to
millions.
See the bikers.
It's a Lloyds of London project, if I ever heard of one.
Apparently, they're going, Clock Watcher tells me that when the London Olympics open shortly, they're going to jump off of Nelson's Column, which isn't that high.
No, not really.
That's base jumping. Those guys are crazy.
So we can, first of all, watch this. Yeah. Wow, another backflip.
Oh.
That was amazing.
Unbelievable.
All right, we're gonna head over now.
I guarantee the insurance will not let Sergey do any of these stunts. He can just watch now.
And then there's the giant drop-off on the other side.
He looks pretty ripped. He's doing something.
Today we're gonna get ourselves time to get over there so we can have a really nice view. So please follow along.
He's definitely Tony Stark. Look at him. What a stud in his Crocs.
Do you remember interviewing them
in
1999?
Yes, when they were just young guys.
Yeah.
And,
isn't that crazy?
It's one of the great pleasures of this job that we do.
Oh.
He ran into that pole. One of the great pleasures is getting to meet people like this, especially before they've become people like this, and then watch their rise.
Today, because we're not in such a hurry, the bikers are going to wait for us.
It's hard not to like both Larry and Sergey. Their enthusiasm, their love for what they do, very Woz-like.
It's a pretty exciting sight through there, so let's make our way through.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say, you know, to try to force the pattern to fit. Say, there's always a Gates to a... to a Paul Allen, or there's always a Woz to a Jobs, but it does tend to fall roughly in those lines.
Yeah. So you say Larry would be the Jobs.
Larry seems to be taking on Sergei's the Jobs or Gates side of things. Yeah.
Well, somebody has to pay attention to business.
Yeah.
But it's always good to have a visionary, somebody like Sergey, who just really thinks outside the box. This is an example. That's the helicopter shot, I would guess, yeah?
Oh, here's the repeller.
This is just a portion of all the equipment that powers this building. We actually, when we were talking about this originally, we looked at having people bike and jump up and down.
TM204 suggests the next meme may be running into poles when wearing Google glasses.
Oh, that's got to hurt.
Yeah, that's going to be a collection of videos of people running into things. I think he's right.
Ironically, he wasn't wearing Google glasses. He was a camera, only a big-ass right? camera.
These shade clip-ins to this other pair of glasses here, and it's a little accessory that we're working on, and it's pretty nice on a bright day like this.
Yeah,
So here we are, and actually it's kind of cool because I don't know if you guys can see me right now. I'm now in a hangout. Back on the other side had a little bit of issues keeping me in the hangout, but here it's working nicely.
Sergey, of course, one of the original founders of Google, and his current title, as I remember, is something like product visionary or product guy.
You can see the bikers right up there. It's a really big drop, actually. It's a really big drop. I'm going to duck under here.
Sergey Mikhailovich Brin.
His dad was named Mikhail.
I know they make it look easy.
He was born in Moscow. Russian Jewish parents who emigrated.
They're going to just show us how they get down off that big ramp.
His mother is a research scientist at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center. His father was a mathematics professor at the University of Maryland. So
let's see you go.
Definitely comes to this from good roots, good stock.
Apparently Vic Gundotra on Google Plus says he thinks Sergey is Batman.
Yeah. No, Tony Stark.
I think it's more Tony Stark than Bruce Wayne.
And if anybody ever has an Iron Man suit, it's going to be Sergey Brin.
You can see that there. We got three, actually. And it's a long way down. Long way down here. I'm actually going to take off my glass so you can see this.
Sergey talks about going back as a teenager. His parents, his family left Russia when he was about five, but going back as a teenager to Russia, and at that point, it reawakened his childhood fear of authority. He said his first impulse on confronting Soviet oppression had been to throw pebbles at a police car. So he's an anti-authoritarian, obviously.
I think Brin's title is co-founder, and he is over new and strategic products.
Mm. I don't know if there's anything new and strategic about extreme cycling and parasailing, but there's definitely the Google Glass project is in there.
We're
going
to make our way downstairs, too, and catch up with you. Hey. Thank you all for watching. I know we had a lot of interest, and we just wanted to show for the people who just, you know, heard about it
this yesterday. Want to show you about something.
Brin's wife, Anne Wojcicki, is the founder of 23andMe, which is the firm that lets you do your own gene analysis. I've done it. It's very interesting.
Swab.
Yeah,
it's a controversy about whether the results of that are useful or not.
They're not.
At this point.
I can tell you right now. But it's fun.
Yeah.
And what... You get some interesting information about your heritage, I think. Sergey Brin, co-founder of Google I.O. You're watching live coverage of Google I.O. Day 2, brought to you by Slingbox. Now, I don't know what's happening there. Slingbox is the device that lets you hook up your home TV system, including your DVR, your satellite or cable box, to the internet. And once you've done that, anywhere you go, you can watch your home TV system. You can control the DVR, playback recordings, set new recordings, change the channel. Anything you could do at home, you can do on the internet, on your iPad, on your Android or iPhone, on your computer too. Find out more at slingbox.com/twit, the ultimate gadget.
That's it. Is that the end of it? Saying anticlimactic end.
Stay tuned for Chrome Sandbox, it says. So no Google TV announcement. That's quite a shock. Yeah, the live stream's over from the I.O. conference, and this is what they did yesterday. They just basically went to programming from the hall. So I guess we're done.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
Kind of a shock that they didn't announce a number of things. Most importantly, Google TV. We'd heard that there was a Vizio, $99 Vizio device.
That's out. That's announced. There's also a new Sony device as well, a box. But nothing that actually is going to be announced on stage. No new rev.
Maybe they didn't
want to
overshadow the Q, which they announced yesterday, their media streaming device. Well, there you have it. That concludes our coverage of Google I.O., the keynotes, day two. We'll continue, of course, coverage of breaking news coming out of Google I.O. yesterday. Kind of as an afterthought, they announced a new API for Google Plus called Google History that lets third parties pump data into your, to affect a timeline on your Google Plus stream. I don't know of anybody doing that yet, but imagine Foursquare showing all your check-ins as kind of your history, or Picasa Web with pictures and so forth. So I think that's actually is a right API to Google Plus, done in a kind of an interesting way to prevent, I suspect, the kind of spamming of Google Plus that you saw with Google Buzz, where people were just kind of pumping their Twitter and other feeds into it and not participating. I think they want to keep, that's the thing they don't want to do on Google Plus. As yesterday, of course, we saw a number of new hardware devices, including the Google Q, a $300 multimedia device that requires an Android phone, the Nexus 7, Google's first foray into a custom tablet with the Google experience on it, and a few other announcements. That's about it.
Yeah, today the big announcements seem to be Chrome browser coming to iOS and Google Drive getting offline editing for Docs.
Big news. And the Google Compute Experience, I think, is...
Yeah, the Compute Engine, right.
Engine, I should say, is huge. That we expected and knew something about. There were no surprises there, I think. All right. Well, that's it. We're going to wrap it up. Thank you, Tom Merritt. Tom will be back in just a few hours with TNT, our daily coverage of tech news, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time, 2200 UTC. Coming up in just a bit, we're going to get reset and do Windows Weekly a little bit late, but we will cover Windows Weekly. iPad Today is we have a new episode, but one we recorded earlier because Sarah Lane's still in France. Is she back next week or the week after?
Week after.
Week after, so we have. Good work. Nice work if you get it. We will have plenty of time. We will not be late with TNT before you buy later tonight. Thanks for joining us. On behalf of Tom Merritt, I'm Leo Laporte. And we'll see you next time.